Hello? Hello everyone, this is Kim here. I'm just waiting a couple minutes for people to join. The agenda is, I posted it into IRC. Okay, let me go ahead and start reading through the boilerplate stuff. So today the highlights will be, we have Val Thomas and David Mason from GC Talent Cloud to present about Talent Cloud. And we'll give a little more context leading up to that and where they fit into the ecosystem. So that's the highlight for today. We'll go through the IP notes. Call notes, scribe selection, introductions and reintroductions, and then the highlight. Anyone else have anything they'd like to add to the agenda before we get started? Okay. So let's dive in. IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. And to do that, you first need to ensure you have a W3 web account. And this is all free, open to the public, so that's how you get a W3 account. And then to sign the IP release of the W3C CCG group, which is the group you're affiliated with, this call is affiliated with, you join here. And to read the community contributor license agreement, that's available at this link. It's in the IRC. And a call notes, these minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. And all attendees should type present plus, no space in between. I'll do this right now so you can see in IRC. And that's to associate your alias with being an attendee. And then also, if you're a first-time attendee and we've never seen your alias before, we'd like you to introduce yourself so we can attribute your alias properly. In IRC, type Q plus, that's the letter Q, symbol plus, no space in between. And that's how you get on the queue to speak. And you can add an optional reminder, Q plus, to mention something. And it's just the word to. And
这样子到底是什么? 身上? What?
Everyone, could you mute yourselves? I think we're hearing some background noise. So if you're not in IRC, that's fine. Simply ask to be put on the queue. And please be brief so the rest of the queue gets a chance to chime in. You can always queue plus again. Okay, now let's do the scribe selection part. Any volunteers to scribe today? I think my pug just tried to volunteer, but unfortunately she can't. Let's see. Someone who hasn't recently volunteered. Let's see. Joshua Marks, could I ask you to scribe today?
I can take my best shot at it. I'm afraid I'm multitasking today. Could I do it next week?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for, yeah. Yeah, and the other thing is we need a more formal list of a rotate through so we can maybe we can give it more advanced notice. So we'll work on that. So thank you. Let's see, who else? Jim Goodell, would you be able to scribe today?
I'm sorry, I'm not in a great place to scribe. Could someone else do it?
Sure.
I'll try to do it in the future.
Okay, thank you.
You got next week.
Okay. We'll still accept volunteers if anyone can volunteer. Let me keep going. Matt Lyle, would you be able to volunteer to scribe today?
Hey, sure, I can do it.
Thank you so much. And just find, you know, we type aliases and then they just what they're saying, but then when we get into the presentation, we can just scribe lightly because the presentation is, you know, if there's slides or whatever, those are part of the minutes as well. So just let me know if you have any questions, and thank you very much. Now for introductions and reintroductions. Okay, anyone new to the call that would like to introduce themselves?
I'm new to the call.
My name is
Ann McNaught. I got introduced to the group by Wayne Chang. I've been working with Boxers for a couple of years, recently got into Uport and Sovereign Credentials as well. I focus on the UX UI aspects of SSI credentials, hoping to improve the human readability primarily.
Thank you for joining us. And I think I missed your first name. Could you say that again, please?
Yes, that's Zan, Z-A-N.
Z-A-N, got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Anyone else new to the call that would like to introduce themselves?
This is Val Thomas from TalentCloud.
Hi, Val.
Hi. I'm very excited to be here today and sharing a little bit about our project. And, very, very excited to be part of the call today and with all of you.
That's great. Thank you for joining us. Let's see. For reintroductions, I thought I would call on someone I saw pop up here, Joe Andrew.
Hi. Am I live?
You are.
Okay, great. Yeah. So I am a former co-chair of the Credentials Community Group. I also run a small consulting company called Legendary Requirements, focused on requirements engineering for digital identity and blockchain systems. And I recently was involved in the PP10 paper that was just published and have been working with Jim Goodell and Alex and the other Jim on what was ILR is now LER, I think. So that's coming soon.
Great. Thanks for joining.
Sure.
Okay, let's move on to the main highlight. And I wanted to give a little context here for which part of the ecosystem we're talking about. So the reason that I'm really interested in what Val and David are doing is they're working with employers, you know, who have job descriptions that, you know, in today's world are kind of flat, but trying more competency-based. So I think what's really interesting about what they're doing is they're focusing on the much-needed consuming side of the credentials that we're talking about issuing. So I think, you know, they're actually – maybe there are more people doing it. They're the only people I'm aware of that are really working with employers to try to make these changes. So it's really interesting to hear about their approach and the tools and open source that they've built. And I've been interested in learning about how we might sort of reuse or align efforts where possible. So with that, I'm very excited to introduce Val Thomas and David Mason, and I'll turn over to you two, and feel free to just take control and turn back to me when you want me to manage a queue for Q&A and things like that.
That's great. Thank you so much, Kim. I just want to make sure from a technical perspective, so we, David and I have a Google Slides presentation, so would we just drop that link in here and follow that way?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And then so, as you're reading out the slides, just say which slide you're on so people can follow along.
So I'm hoping that this is the right one here. So I've just entered the link in our chat.
Got it.
Excellent. Okay, cool. So, yes, very excited to be here today. As Kim mentioned, we are a Government of Canada initiative called Talent Cloud. We are going to give a little bit of a high-level view of what the project is, how it came into being, what we've done to date in terms of the project writ large, but also specifically on the aspect of portable skill credentials and how that fits into the broader foundation of creating stronger skill signals as interoperable records for employees, and what that means to create this new technology and use this in a way that connects us to a lot of the amazing initiatives that are starting around the world. So I'm going to start really by defining the problem, which is on slide two. What we discovered very early on, and I think all of us are in the similar space of recognizing that the discoverability of talent and skill recognition is essentially the backbone of any workforce, but specifically in the public service, so looking at it from that particular angle, though that can be applied to other sectors as well, the way that transferable skills or competencies writ large, it's very difficult to create that talent signal, given the fact that they do not necessarily transfer from other sectors easily. The HR system that we have really relies a lot on formal credentials, so university degrees, and it creates barriers for those that do not necessarily have those formal credentials. The data that we have is disconnected, so in the sense that individuals are asked to repeat multiple processes, whether that's showing your official degree or showing your formal education as a piece of paper to demonstrate that you have that particular credential, or even if it's about how you demonstrate your skills through assessments, that cycle of assessment and demonstrating skills often has to occur time and time again. And really, there is no way to showcase a real-time account of these ever-evolving skills. And so in order to be this agile public service, we really need to know what it is that people are capable of and that their experiences are credible. Slide three. The government right now is standing at the brink of a digital age, and we are rooted in basically analog a lot of analog models. So the HR model, it was designed for the 20th century. So we are not very well positioned in terms of our HR process to be responsive and agile and know what it is that people are capable of. We need to make a better step forward in terms of being able to get talent in faster. We know that we need to be able to be better at how we find and match talent. And this speaks to the fact that people are experiencing and gaining skills in multiple facets of their lives. They should be able to create those signals of those experiences in a way that is credible, that employers can see and trust. And that point to mobilizing and restructuring talent rapidly speaks to, I think we can all share experiences about when COVID hit, you know, we had to know very quickly what it is that people were capable of in order to be responsive to those needs. I know speaking specifically in government, that was a challenging element. And so it really shines a light on the fact that we are in a time where we really have to step up to protect the social contract between workers and government and workers in general. And the fact that this constantly changing atmosphere of skill recognition and skill attainment is really at the root of it. One thing in Canada that I wanted to mention, I think this is very similar to the States, is also that the rise of the gig work or gig economy, where there's a lot of freelance or contingent workers that make up about 30% of employment opportunities in Canada. The government of Canada is currently spending billions of dollars, what we call staffing by procurement. So this is where we engage with staffing agencies in order to find talent. And what that means is that we're actually contributing to this dark side of the economy because these individuals do not have union representation. They do not have sick leave. And, you know, I think the government has a real opportunity to do better and to create a stronger influx of talent and to provide protection for those employees. One of our foundational fundamental principles is really seeing people that are more than their job title. And so, yeah, slide three. So just a very interesting note here, and I'm going to try to go through these slides quite quickly because the most important thing that I want to share with you is towards the end. So I will try to get through some of this stuff pretty quick. But what I did want to share with you is that what makes Talent Cloud Story kind of interesting is that this was a grassroots build. So the four of us actually, four non-executive, non-executive public servants were passionate about talent mobility and creating stronger signals of what it is that people are capable of in government. We actually started one of the first, for the Government of Canada, the first innovation hub called Inspire Innovation. And so we were really rooted in being a way to get people's voices heard. We had the opportunity to work on several talent mobility projects, some of those being the first open badge pilot for the Government of Canada. So we've been really following a lot of talent mobility signals for quite a while. But what happened in our kind of origin story is that we kind of outgrew the mandate of where we were. And so we would work in the evenings and work at night and coming up with this kind of next step, which is really what Talent Cloud became, which is a talent repository for project-based work. So we started a very small team and then we grew, I think we're upwards almost of 20 people now. One thing that I wanted to say is that just hugely passionate people, very focused on how we might create a stronger talent pipeline, and we went live in 2018. So what is Talent Cloud? Slide five. Talent Cloud is the world's first public sector gig marketplace. Things to emphasize is that we are a skills-based staffing model that is optimized for project work in government, that we are structured around next-generation workers' rights, and fundamentally very core to this presentation today, what we're focusing on is a new skills or credential recognition engine for employment. Effectively, what we're trying to do is reimagine a new approach for government's talent model. And this is an experimental project to reimagine staffing for the digital age. Slide six. Some of the things that we're proud of, there are many, many things. I could have probably filled a lot of slides, things that we're grateful for and things that we're proud of. What I wanted to highlight for you here is that in terms of portable credentials, we, as mentioned, we did the first open badges pilot for the Government of Canada, as well as a blockchain block search pilot, which concluded last year. We try to connect with as many learning hubs and thought leaders, such as the T3 Innovation Network, very much embedded in the work with the W3C communities. The OECD has done a case study on Talent Cloud, as well as the free agents model, which is an internal talent mobility structure that we developed out of Deloitte's GovCloud theory paper. The UN has expressed interest, as have other countries. They're keeping their eye on what we're doing because it is quite radical in terms of government hiring anyway. And we've also been very fortunate in having the opportunity to speak about the vision for Talent Cloud at global forums such as D9 and the Open Government Partnership Summit. On slide 7, one of the things that I really wanted to emphasize is the digital standards for the Government of Canada. And I'm really proud to share these, and because we really do adhere to them and we believe very strongly in all of them. Designing with users, how we work in an agile sprint format, working in the open. So our code for the Talent Cloud platform is actually on GitHub. So we very much are proponents of supporting open source, open by default, using open standards, and really being ethical and designing ethical services and being good data stewards and making sure that we collaborate widely. And this is why these types of calls are so very much important and how we are very grateful to be part of that. On slide 8, very high level. So this is our high level view of what is different with Talent Cloud. So this 30-day target staffing time from the private sector may not seem like a lot, but in government, it actually takes upwards of 200 days, if not more, to bring somebody in for indeterminate hire. So we are really trying to shake the foundations of getting good talent in faster. And the reason for that is good talent does not wait around. And so we really need to create this process of hiring faster. We focus on what is called a five-factor best fit matching process. Normally, when you apply for a job in government, it's really a lot of the power is being held by the employer or the hiring manager. And what I mean by that is they will say this is all the criteria that you meet and you need to shove all your skills and all your talent inside that little box that they've created for you. And the individual really ends up not knowing much about the manager or the culture or the environment or where they're going to be working in. So we put in a lot of effort in how we can provide more data up front. So to allow better matching and more accountability for the hiring manager so that they can share more information about their work and hopefully make a better match and give more power to the individual to make that decision and be part of that decision, as opposed to showing up to work on day one and say, like, oh, this is your job, this is where you're working, and have it be a surprise. The bias reduction methodology, so we are really rooted in diversity and inclusion, and specifically with Indigenous talent. So we feel very strongly about getting a stronger pipeline of Indigenous talent into the public service, and I'll speak a little bit to that in the next slide. As well as increasing the number of regionally accessible jobs. So we actually, when we speak with hiring managers to create these skills-based jobs on Talent Cloud, we actually try to promote remote work by default, which is an interesting thing post-COVID. But we were really trying to emphasize that culture, you know, 2 years ago. So this has been an interesting development to see that because we've been educating people on that for a while. And then, of course, the new skills and competencies credential recognition methodology, which, again, we'll get into in the next couple of slides. So things that we've built to date on slide 9. We have built several components of the Talent Cloud platform, specifically an area for applicants to be able to build their profile and claim their skills. So that allows applicants to say, these are the skills that I can claim, and these are the skills that have been verified or can be verified through various assessments. For managers, we've built ways for them to build their job poster skill profile or build their skills-based job posters, as well as the screening plans. And this is really key because this whole flow of skills, hiring for skills, means that you also have to not only have the skill, have the definition of the skill, the level of the skill, but also how that skill is going to be assessed through various behavioral indicators, and that is done through the development of assessment plans and rubrics. For HR advisors, we've also created an area for them to be part of this ecosystem where they can have all of the information at their fingertips. But the one thing I did want to share here, which was an interesting development, is as we were kind of chugging along with the Talent Cloud platform and iterating and improving as we went, COVID hit, COVID-19. And so we actually were able to repurpose some of the elements of the Talent Cloud platform and create what was called the Talent Reserve, which was an emergency response strategic talent resourcing platform that allowed departments within the Government of Canada to identify their critical needs due to COVID-19. And this allowed public servants to say, hey, I have these skills on offer. I'm not in a critical role. I can help elsewhere. Please match me to where I'm best needed. And there was a lot of really interesting data that came out of that. And again, to reemphasize that this crazy time that we're in right now, this most unprecedented time, really has shone a light on the fact that people are more than their job titles and their job descriptions. And one quick thing to share about that is there was a critical need for a particular skill. So Microsoft Dynamics, they needed someone with Microsoft Dynamics. And being able to get to that granularity of which public servant had that particular skill that could meet that immediate need turned out to be a really complex problem to solve. And I think this is why some of this work is really so very important, so we can try to address some of these issues and solve them so that we don't have to go through this again. And the final piece here that I would like to share is the development of an Indigenous talent portal, which is currently in development. But this allows Indigenous public servants, Indigenous peoples to create their own profile and identify their skills to be seen, but that it is run by Indigenous people, that it is for Indigenous people, and that they have a space that a visibility in this ecosystem as well. And slide 10. One thing that I wanted to point out here is that all of this work is really built on a foundation of skills and skills architecture. What you see on the right-hand side is our kind of conceptual framework. So we've essentially parsed two main streams of work, one being transferable skills, and those have a subset of skills within them. So whether those are interpersonal skills or cognitive skills, working in government, et cetera. The one thing I'd like to show here is we actually compiled a lot of the transferable skills that stemmed out of research from about 50 research reports on the future of skills. So McKinsey, World Economic Forum, RBC Humans Wanted, multiple governments were also doing their own future scanning pieces. So we aggregated all of that data and included that into our skills database. I should also reference that from the occupational side, we're working with domain experts in functional communities to define these specific occupational competencies as well. But the thing really that I wanted to highlight is the fact that it's not just about creating the buckets and it's not just about creating the definitions. We're really looking at trying to create a full ecosystem. So that means the level in which the skill can be demonstrated, as well as the behavioral indicators. And those are really important when it comes time to matching the skill that eventually matches up with the assessment. So a lot of this work for us is going to be really key to being part of an open skill ecosystem, which is why we're really excited about how we might be able to connect to a bigger, broader, interoperable space where we can be contributing to that skills, open skills ecosystem. On slide 11. So things that we know, I'm going to go through this one really quickly, but anyone that has applied for a job can attest to the fact that, you know, you go into a job or for a job application, you get assessed, and then you have to go through the multiple hurdles of, you know, passing the exam, passing the interview, getting your references checked. But at the end of the day, only one person is going to get the job. What we see as a real missed opportunity is that all of the people that are getting assessed along the way are demonstrating that they have skills at a certain level. But there's no process that is collecting that assessment skill data. It's getting thrown out the window, which means that applicants, even if you made it all the way down to the end and that everything passed, if you pass all those different levels of assessment, you end up going back at square zero and having to start all over again. So we see this as a real missed opportunity, not only in terms of, you know, the effort that goes into this, but also as the talent signal. So that really became one of our strong value propositions. How can we allow individuals to create ownership or get ownership of this skill assessment data so that it can then be reused on other applications and also be seen as this portable assessment skill credential. On slide 12, this is what we're starting with. So this is a very high level process map of what we are putting forward as verifiable skill assessment records. The goal is that these are verified and trusted by hiring managers that ultimately will give more freedom, more accountability, and is also interoperable by design. So a very high level person creates a profile on Talent Cloud. They create their, they start their skill application. They're able to claim their skills via different areas of experience. So that could be work, it could be, you know, communities, it could be through education. Once that application is assessed, they will be invited to different assessment stages, which is nothing new. This is what a normal hiring process is. What is different is that once this candidate passes their various types of assessment, this is where we're going to be triggering the assessment record. That assessment record can then go back into the candidate's profile. So whether that is hosted on Talent Cloud or whether it goes into a digital wallet, which David will be showing you at the end of this presentation. And then that that verifiable assessment record can then be reused on other applications as a way to substantiate other skills when applying for new jobs. Slide 13. The idea here is that we want to provide not only the job marketplace, but also this skill currency validation. But we see this as being far beyond just creating something for Government of Canada. What we see as it having the potential to be seen as something valuable as a skill signal in multiple sectors as well. The one thing I wanted to share on slide 14 is really that a lot of this work is rooted in the collaborations that we have developed over the years, and we would not be where we are without that work. So I just wanted to give a shout out to some of the people that we've been working with that have provided this kind of guidance and support. And some of those include the fact that we have an executive advisory board in the Government of Canada that basically has been comprised of multiple thought leaders in the space, including, you know, we have NASA has contributed their time on our Talent Cloud advisory board. We've had the Harvard Kennedy School of Business. We have Gov Lab, Deloitte, First Nations Information Governance Sector. So we're just very, very fortunate that we have had such strong support to get us where we are. Without further ado, I'm going to shift gears a little bit. So that was a very high level of what Talent Cloud is, what we've done to date, where we're trying to go with the skill credential piece. What I'd like to now shift gears to is to show you some of the Talent Cloud UX, UI work and UI work that has been done. I would like to emphasize that we really put a lot of focus into user research and, you know, designs into the hands of individuals that will be actually using the product. So we've got a team of UX designers on the team. And so some of the work that, you will see are some of the user flows that we wanted to showcase to you today. So this first page is really just one example of some of the UX work that is being done, so what we're testing with users right now. On slide 15 is what we're gonna show you is a kind of a walkthrough of some of the UI work that is being done. So specifically, our goal here is to kind of walk you through what a process could be like if we were to merge through a workflow between an applicant who is claiming a skill, a hiring manager that would then verify that skill, and then having that skill go back to the applicant and showcase what that might look like. So I'm going to start ahead with that. So on slide 16, what you see here is essentially a skill from an applicant's point of view. So mm-hmm. earlier I'd mentioned the difference between claiming a skill and having a verified skill. So the goal here is that if a person can should be able to say, look, this is the totality of the things that I am capable of, and be able to put a mark in the ground to say, like, I can do these things at this level. Where the verification comes in is when you then may present that forward to be assessed. And so there is an interesting fork in the road between these are the skills that I have and I am claiming them versus these are the skills that have been assessed and then they've been verified. So in this particular case here, the individual is on their profile. They've claimed a skill. This is a kind of a drop-down menu. So they're, in this case, claiming that they have design research. I should emphasize here that where I see an opportunity is how we might be able to tap into, you know, either, you know, open taxonomies or ontology so that we're all speaking the same language. But that is really one of the broader goals. The person here then says the level of the skill and perhaps how they have evidence to substantiate. So how they are making the claim that they have that skill at that level. The next slide. So this is from a manager's point of view. So this is a manager coming in and seeing that application and seeing that this person has made a claim for that skill. They have then invited that person to an assessment. So in this case, this is where you would see a hiring manager actually capturing the information for that particular assessment. So in this case, they did a written exam. At this level, the person passed. This is all the information that is captured of when it was issued, and along with the assessment criteria and outcomes. So, for example, you know, was it a situational behavioral test? You know, was the pass rate? Any kind of information that they would want to capture here in the assessment record. And then the next step is that it goes back to the candidate, where they then would see this credential in their profile that they could then see the additional information of that the fact that they passed with the ratio, when was it issued, all that kind of metadata is all captured that they then have now in their profile that they can reuse. So again, this is very high level kind of conceptual stuff, but what I'm really excited to show you now as we're going to shift gears once again, where I'm going to get ready to pass this over to David, because we're going to demonstrate the verifiable credential skills prototype. And David, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Very good. Okay, great. So hi, everyone. I'm just going to cover some work that we've done, I guess, pretty much over the last year now, which is really, you know, kind of taking the essential functionality of verifiable credentials and its ecosystem and creating a very simple demonstration around it. So I'm starting with slide 20. Does everyone on slide 20 see user profile page?
Yes.
Okay, good, because it was out of sync earlier for me for some reason. So again, this is not the Talent Cloud product. This is just the most basic flow possible. And this is, you know, really what the user's profile page would look like in an essential way. And, you know, one of the things that really the point of all this is, like, how do we merge this kind of, you know, traditional web application where all the data is in a server and, you know, the web application is, you know, an interface to that with this, you know, world of decentralized information and wallets. I mean, I'll just mention as well that we're just using a couple of quote-unquote off-the-shelf open source libraries. I'm very appreciative of different people who've helped us out. Dimitri Vagadudon has really helped us with casual advice along the way, and that's really appreciated. So from this basic profile screen on page 20, the user might choose a user create a skill. And here the user is creating the most basic skill possible, well, maybe. And once they've created it, it's showing up on this profile page on slide 22. and 22 is now updated with the user's contributed skill. On slide 23, in this case, the manager has the same view, but you'll see that there's a verify button. So if the manager chooses that verify button, then the skill itself becomes wrapped in a verifiable credential. Where in this case, using a server-hosted private key and signing on the server. So this is not the decentralized world. This is, you know, how do we make this part of the decentralized world? And here we can see the skill wrapped as a verifiable credential. And we've also added the functionality in slide 26, where you can, in this case, the user has presented the, chosen the option to present a credential from wallet. And of course, the, using the credential handler API and the verifiable presentation API, first we're confirming the user wants to do a request. On slide 26, or sorry, slide 27, they're choosing a wallet. And, you know, we really want to support multiple wallets. We've certainly seen the value of that and the fact that, you know, the large parts of the community also have this goal. We certainly are not thinking of a government of Canada wallet, so to speak. So here, we'll just rough this in again. Here the user would choose the credential to use and present. We have questions. This was done a while ago, so probably the conversation is advanced, but we don't really know how, you know, how we would use a presentation here because it feels more like a credential, but I guess that will be answered over time. So that was slide 28. Slide 29, this is kind of the opposite. We're going to store a credential from the user's wallet. Again, simply the credential handler API with its pop-up. Choosing the wallet to store to on slide 30. Slide 31, you know, we would have stored the credential to the wallet. So slide 32 is really just kind of off the top of our head because there's so much to cover here. These are some of the questions we would have. And, you know, with our priority of remaining a UX first project, we were very interested in usability studies that might be available around this kind of flow. You know, the idea of merging decentralized and decentralized worlds, how do we do that with the wallet approach? How do we have a database of users' credentials? So many different issues around that. For us, it's a priority to remain an open source project. I mean, of course, we can connect to a service, but we don't want to have our software that doesn't work around it. And the huge task of data aligning in particular, as well as choosing framework elements. And finally, really just tracking the most essential information. We don't have people working on this full time. It's, you know, really just like, oh, let's try this out. And we certainly are working at the level where we want to find the highest quality and most suitable libraries to use and keep connected with the community so that we're, you know, aware of any issues that you know, we need to continuously include. So that's really the part, my part of this. Thank you.
Cool. And so I would just like to, one last kind of wrapping up slide, which is really that we are very grateful for the opportunity to share a bit of our project today, and that we really are about solving some of these really big problems together. There is so much amazing work that is happening in the verifiable credential community, that is happening, you know, T3 innovation with the interoperable learner record. So it's really to see, like, how can we be part of this bigger, broader ecosystem and leverage what is already out there. This is a very unique project in the sense that we do have a lot of support to test things out. We've been given permission to explore and test these things. But we are, you know, a real live project to help people, and that's really at the end of the day what we want to do. So any sort of insights or, you know, anything that we should be focusing on or addressing or collaborations that might you might think of, we would be more than happy to address any of those. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. This is a fantastic presentation and demo. We have a queue, and starting is Joshua Marks.
Yeah, thank you. It was a terrific presentation, and actually I have many questions, but I'll focus really on the ones related to slide 10 and slide 12. So it sounds like you have a fairly well-developed skill architecture where you define occupational skills and transferable skills. I imagine occupational skills would include academic skills, which is the area I work in primarily, but I'm very interested in those transferable or what we sometimes call soft skills. You say you've done a lot of research and collected these. Where and how, where are they formatted, and how can we view and access and reference your skills so we might create either crosswalks between them or integrate them in larger frameworks? I think that's critical to getting comparability of skills between different organizations that define them. And there are several groups working on those kinds of skills ontologies. Have you looked at implementing CASE or another standard for making those available in the API and machine readable way?
So this is Val. Thank you so much, Josh, for those questions. And I'm really excited to see you hone in on the transferable skills piece, because what we've learned is that in the scanning that we did on future skills, those soft skills or transferable skills really were the ones that were most frequently cited in many cases. And so to answer your question about, you know, what we're connecting to, so we've been trying to reach out into different communities. So recently we met with David, correct me if I'm wrong, the gentleman that we met with recently was it Cass? I think not Case, it was Cass.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, but we are definitely looking to see how we can structure our data in a way that it can become interoperable. So the way that we have kind of structured things to date, to be perfectly honest, it's been a little bit ad hoc. But we know that in order for this data to interoperate, we need to connect with these bigger, broader systems. So those conversations are starting to happen now. But I do agree with you. It is of utmost importance for us to get that right so that we can, make whatever it is that we're doing available and connect to those bigger and broader systems.
And so, with regard to CAS and CASE, they sort of talk to each other. CASE is the IMS Global Standard for Competencies and Academic Standards Exchange is what it stands for. CAS is a specification but not a standard. If you create something in CASE using, a free software like OpenSALT, you can certainly exchange them with a CASE server and into the T3's future network of exchange. But there is existing a network of exchange using CASE called the CASE Network. So we can work with you to provide a CASE API on top of what you have. You can use the spec to do that. You can use OpenSALT. There's many roads to get there. But I highly recommend building a tool for exchanging these and aligning them with other organizations, because we will quickly get into a Tower of Babel problem where everybody's defining in different ways.
Yeah, I totally, and I guess really that this big broad vision of creating this like open skills ecosystem is really foundational to this piece. So I will definitely like to reach out more and learn more about that. Thank you.
Okay, and then to connect that to slide 12.
Yeah.
The critical piece in terms of defining these competencies and skills is how you measure them in a consistent way. So I'm very interested in how you're connecting assessments to these skills, particularly how you're assessing the soft skills, and what kinds of rubrics you're applying to determine the performance levels for things like grit and tenacity and problem solving, et cetera.
Yes. So this is something that is really at the crux of all of this kind of skill identification, skill mapping work that is being done. At the end of the day, we'll always come back to assessments. So what we've done is I don't think we have the perfect answer. So to be, you know, very upfront about that. But what we do have is a process. So currently when an applicant comes up to, you know, government to apply for a job in the Government of Canada, the hiring manager has to have an assessment tool and an assessment process in order to ensure that that applicant, when they're going through the various processes, there's a rubric to say, yes, this was, you know, this skill was demonstrated at this particular level. What we're doing is we're basically creating a tool to capture that data, that then that process that is already being developed. So we've done a couple of things. So right now there are no like standardized tests writ large for every skill that an applicant could potentially have to demonstrate on for an application in government. There are some standardized tests for sure, but this is not a common process for every single job application. So what we're trying to get at to show proof of concept is to say a hiring manager already has to build the tools. They already have to build the rubrics. Our goal is to start building like a library of skills and skill assessment tools to be able to evaluate and measure the effectiveness of those particular questions and tools for measurement of those particular skills. So that's part of our long game of our how we're going to do this from a behavioral kind of science perspective. But then the other piece of this is that hiring managers also have to create what's called a record of decision. So they have to document every process. So every time they are assessing a candidate during a certain assessment process for a particular skill, they have to document that. And that's a lot of the data that gets kind of missed. So this is part of the value proposition to say we want to start, you know, collecting that data so that it becomes part of the assessment record to hopefully demonstrate what has been done to provide some form of rigor so that that candidate can then have that record with that data to say this is what's been done, this is what I've been demonstrated as a skill. Therefore, another manager can trust it. And that's really what all this is about. I don't think we're ever going to solve writ large the ambiguity of assessments, but at least if we can get to the granularity of what has been done, hopefully that will create a bigger or shine a stronger light on that so we can get to that trust piece.
Yeah, and the more measures you can take on each of these skills over time to determine the progression of learning is what we're focusing on in K-12, right? In secondary, primary and secondary, you want to show that the learner is growing towards some goal. Yeah. So it's really measuring many times rather than taking one assessment and taking a point in time of evaluation.
Yeah, and actually, Josh, just to add to that, really one of our foundational principles in all of this is really creating dynamic records and the idea of not having something that is static, that is just that stays there and nobody ever looks on it, collects dust, but rather that is dynamic so you can continue to add evidence over time so that it grows with the individual so you can have more and more points of reference to substantiate these skill claims. And that's what we're really trying to do is how can we create that system that allows for people to earn these dynamic kind of skill claim records that shows that development over time?
Yeah, sort of a suggestion or a hint. I think it's less about assessments and more about work task evaluations continuously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that piece is actually towards the end where we see this prototype or this kind of implementation going, because to your point, assessment just kind of gets you in the door and you can do great on the exam, do great on the interview, but at the end of the day, it's what you demonstrate in the day-to-day work. And that's where you get, you know, once the honeymoon stage is over, you get to see, you know, what a person is like, you know, once they've been doing the work day in and day out for like a year or whatever. And so that piece of this, I think, is also part of that dynamic demonstration piece. So it's not you've just done it once, it becomes a thing that never gets touched again. but how can you have that constant evolution, you know, that shows that, yes, that person has passed these assessments, but they can also do it in a real world as well.
I go further to say that those soft skills cannot be assessed in a traditional manner. They can only be assessed by evaluating real work. You can't determine how the problem solves until they solve a problem for you. You can't tell how well they collaborate until they collaborate with you.
Yeah. So key. This is where we're really looking at what we're seeing a lot of signals coming up around the interest for these transferable and soft skills. I feel personally that there's a lot of interesting work that's starting to come up around that, but I think we do need to do a better job in being able to capture that kind of information, because right now it's still very new, but I think there's a lot of work for us to do, and I think it's really exciting work.
Okay, well, I'm happy to share what we're doing in Broward on very similar kinds of things in the primary space.
Yeah, I'd like to get you guys back for that. So we'll have to schedule that as well. Nate, you're on the queue next.
Thanks. And I apologize if some of this is a little bit repetitive. I was having IRC trouble and couldn't get the link to the slide deck. I heard a couple references to being able to accept verifiable credentials into this system from other sources, from wallets of holders particularly. What is the actual claim structure that you're accepting? And then to Josh's point, you know, about which skills can these claims be made anyway? What would someone on the external side who wants to be able to recognize one of the skills so that it would be used in this system, what do they need to do in order for that credential to be able to be processed?
David, did you want to take that one?
I think this is really just the part of the bundle of questions that we need to answer, that find out how everyone else is doing it and what's most suitable to our process.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask if these folks had seen the prototypes work that this verifiable credentials for education task force had been putting together with possible, credential structures for things like skill recognition.
I'll be honest, this is not our full-time work, and we really want to be on track, but I find it an overwhelming amount of information. So any pointers to the most information, the best partners is what we're really looking for.
Cool. I'll share a link. It's only 2 weeks old or so. So it hasn't been around forever.
Yeah. And actually, Nate, I wanted to, and David, I wanted to jump in on that question because that would be really interesting if we can further collaborate on that. But also, I noticed while David was going, he's already using a lot of the protocols that we're talking about using in the CCG. So the wallets and issuing screenshots that he showed, those are using Credential Handler API, and this is more for everyone, broader groups information. So that's using Credential Handler API, which is, a standard that's available through the CCG, and there are open source reference implementations already. So in fact, in earlier demos on this recurring call, we've seen something like that. So it's really interesting that they're using verifiable credentials, verifiable presentations, and they're using associated APIs that let learners, store credentials in their quote-unquote wallet. So that wallet that you see demoed is a web application, but, you could think of it as a progressive web application. Maybe these also support learners storing their credentials in their, like a mobile app or something like that. So I think that we're, through this group, it's a really good place to continue collaborating on what are those protocols, like exchange protocols, but then also the data model of the, the credential itself. It would be nice to be going in the same direction there. Oh, I noticed we're getting close on time. But I don't see anyone else on the queue, but I think, you know, I'm also interested to hear, you know, further alignment work around the sort of taxonomies and a lot of other topics mentioned on this. I think a good next step as well is to hear more from Joshua on what they're doing in Broward. I'd be interested to hear about that alignment. But then also on the technical side, definitely those the data model and the you know, collaborating on those protocols, because that's really compelling. I didn't realize that you are already issuing verifiable credentials. So in that, to that extent, we're speaking the same language in terms of, you know, what kind of data can be passed from, you know, learners to relying parties. And with that, I wanted to thank Val and David for that fantastic presentation. And if anyone has any follow-up questions, feel free to add them, email the CCG mailing list. And thanks again.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks very much.